This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones. Welcome to the pentathlon of podcasting. You are now a competitor in this pentathlon of podcasting, and you can win a gold medal. There's only one medal. There's no silver, there's no bronze in the pentathlon of podcasting. There's only a gold. What? How do you get a gold medal, Mr. Jones? It's very simple. You don't watch one single minute of the CCP Genocide Olympics brought to you by NBC. Not one minute of the CCP Genocide Olympics brought to you by NBC and all of their sponsors. You're not going to buy one product or avail yourself to any of the services of any of the sponsors of the Genocide Olympics. And if you do that, congratulations. You can tell your grandchildren you won a gold medal at the Beijing Genocide Olympics, and you should be proud of that. Today, we're going to be interviewing Prime Minister Salih Hidayat. Now, if you're a regular listener to the show, he's on a lot, and you know more about the Uyghur than anyone you know, and you've known before anyone else knew. But today, this is a show you are not going to want to miss. You're going to want to listen to this interview, and you're going to want to share it with your friends. Tomorrow, we have on the great Sheila Logminas as we continue every day a different abuse of the CCP. Tomorrow, we're going to have Sheila Logminas on the shamelessness of the media. But today, we have the great Prime Minister, Salih Hidayat. This episode is being brought to you by the Vulnerable People Project, standing in solidarity with the vulnerable. And I will say it was this show and our organization over 2 years ago that first, I believe, we coined the term Genocide Games, Genocide Olympics, over 2 years ago when I wrote an article over there at the stream calling on people to boycott the Genocide Olympics. And now these Olympics have been a total catastrophe for the CCP, a debacle for NBC and for all of the sponsors. And when you support the Vulnerable People Project, you can bet you're standing with the most vulnerable. You're standing with us as we do influence campaigns like this global boycott of the Beijing Genocide Olympics. Or you can stand with us as we do our relief efforts in Afghanistan. It usually takes us 24 hours after identifying a vulnerable Christian or other minority community to get them into a safe house and get them all the food and coal for heat they need to survive not only the Taliban, but the harsh winter. When you go to thegreatcampaign.org, you're standing with us, you're standing with them. You become a monthly donor, you get my book with John Zmierak, The Race to Save Our Century. This episode is also being brought to you by MyPillow.com. Well, you're listening to the show. Why don't you go to MyPillow.com and browse around? There's a great sale. There's a great bedding sale. And browse around. Use the secret code Jones when you click the radio listener square for deep, deep discounts. All right, on with my interview with the great and wonderful Prime Minister in exile of occupied East Turkestan, Salih Hidayat. On the Jason Jones Show. Aloha, Prime Minister Salih Hidayat. Welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
Aloha, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Now, Prime Minister, last time you were on my show, I could tell you were down leading up to the Olympics. But I said that this stumbling block is going to be a stepping stone to allow us to amplify the plight of the Uyghur and the other captive nations and abused peoples by the CCP. And I think you should be hopeful now. How do you feel looking at how the world is responding to the Genocide Games?
Well, I'll be honest, I'm not as, you know, too hopeful given the fact that, one, you know, this Genocide Games should not even been happening right now. Governments, you know, they should have not just engaged in a diplomatic boycott, but a full, you know, boycott. We shouldn't have sent our athletes there to, you know, take part in China's propaganda to whitewash, you know, its ongoing genocide in East Turkestan against the Uyghurs, along with the abuses, you know, against the people of Hong Kong, Tibet, Southern Mongolia, and China itself.
Okay, but I think what has become obvious in these genocide games, if there would have been no genocide games, I think it would have been worse. I'm so grateful that these games happened, and I am grateful, follow me here, that there wasn't, as I'm seeing how it's unfolding, I'm grateful that they didn't even, these other nations didn't just, they didn't boycott. Here's why. What has become obvious is that the globalists in the West are allied with the CCP. And there is no defeating the CCP without defeating the globalists in the West. And there is no defeating the globalists in the West without defeating the CCP. It's become clear with the way our corporations, the way NBC, the way our those who occupy our governments are so shameless in their partnering with the CCP in these genocide games. I think it is clarified for so many that things have to change at home to change things in China. And I do believe that when the history books are written, that the Beijing genocide games will, where they mark the beginning of the end of the CCP. I really believe that. And if these games had never happened, they could have carried on with business as usual. But I am surprised at how across the political spectrum in the West, as I go and look at NBC's Twitter and Facebook posts on the Olympics and see in the comment thread, they're just being lashed. And so I agree, you know, there has to be next steps. We have to take the House. As a Republican, we Republicans have to take the House. We have to pray the truckers break the back of the government in Canada and free them from those draconian restrictions. You know, it's been shocking to me in these weeks, Prime Minister, to see that the same mainstream media outlets that label salt of the earth working class truckers in Canada as fascists, those same media outlets apologize for the CCP. And it was that dichotomy that just made it strikingly clear for me that this is an alliance and they're holding hands. And this was an attempt by the globalists in the West to normalize what the CCP is doing, not only to the Uyghur, but to Hong Kong, to their own people, to the Tibetans. And they have failed. I mean, do you believe? I mean, I think this is, as a propaganda stunt, this is completely backfired for the CCP and the globalists, don't you think?
Yes, in many ways. I mean, it actually has, you know, it has brought a lot more attention to, you know, these corporations that have been, you know, sponsoring the Olympics, despite fully knowing that, you know, the Chinese government, that they're, you know, helping the Chinese government at CCP, you know, whitewash its crimes in front of the international community. And so we're happy to see that, you know, people are slowly, you know, starting to wake up. And, you know, we're hoping for more, you know, meaningful actions to be taken, you know, apart by everyone, whether it's the people, governments, and organizations and corporations themselves.
You know what strikes me as amazing? How many Uyghur are in the United States, approximately?
So there's not a exact clear number. We estimate, based on the U.S. Census Bureau, we estimate, you know, they estimated about in 2013 there was about roughly 8,900 Uyghurs. We estimate as of 2022 there's anywhere from at least 10,000 to upwards of 15,000 Uyghurs.
I mean, we're talking less than the population of a big high school or a community college anywhere in America. I mean, that's not a large group. And these are working class folks, right, that are just, they're immigrants, they're new immigrants that are trying to scrape their way in this new country, right? It's not like they're a wealthy community. It's a very small community, and it is a community without very much wealth. And is that fair to say?
Yes. You know, as you said, many of them here, they're, you know, having struggles even obtaining, you know, asylum, work permits, you know, even providing for their families.
And yet, and I want to congratulate you, and there's a lot of, thanks to your, you know, you coming on the show, There's a lot of Uyghur that listen to the show, and they write me, and they're all over the world. And I want to commend your community. Saudi Arabia is not with you. Turkey's not with you. The Biden administration is not with you. The mainstream media, you know, the social media giants are against you. When I try to pay to boost my articles or shows or even news articles from The Economist or from Al Jazeera on Facebook, when I try to pay to boost those on Facebook, they always disapprove them, which is just strikingly unbelievable. And yet, the world is referring to these as the genocide games. There's not one center of power in the world standing with the Uyghur. Not one. Not the Muslim community, not the leaders of the Christian communities, not my own Pope has never said the word Uyghur, not a government. I don't see any governments in the world front shelving this. And so you have the Uyghur in diaspora living their life, scraping by, struggling, addled with PTSD from what they've experienced and what they know their families are experiencing. And yet you are crushing the CCP right now. I know it does not feel like that to you because you're in the middle of a battle, but you are crushing them. The world is calling these the genocide games. The world. NBC's hosts are hanging their heads in shame. And the CCP had to react to your activism. By the way, they listen to this show. They're not very sophisticated. When I have you on, or when I talk about the Uyghur, and now pretty much every show, through the application I have, I can see where people are listening, and Beijing lights up. Beijing lights up. You know, who's listening in Beijing? Come on. Behind that firewall. They're not very sophisticated. But they responded to you, Prime Minister Salih Hidayat, and to all these activists who are struggling to make ends meet in these new countries across the world, addled with the sorrow of the suffering of their family. And the CCP had to respond to you. How did they respond to you? In the most obvious way, they had a Uyghur with, it's interesting how they said it. I want to get your take on this. The media reported it this way. They had a skier with a Uyghur name light the flame. They didn't say a Uyghur. It was with a Uyghur name. And then they had their ethnicity as Chinese. Did you catch that?
Yes. So again, the Chinese government, you know, they are trying to even remove the mention of our ethnicity, you know, saying that Uyghurs, you know, they're putting forth this revisionist narrative that Uyghurs are part of the Chinese nation. They are Chinese, you know, they got, you know, it was the foreign devils and, you know, foreign imperialists that, you know, told them that they were different to create problems for China. But they are, you know, Chinese people.
Right. So that's just, that was part of their propaganda. They said China, they said Uyghur name. They didn't say they were even Uyghur. They had a Uyghur name. Did you catch that little subtle twist?
Yes.
They said they had a Uyghur name. That's bizarre. You wouldn't say, had an Irish name, you'd say he was Irish, right? It's bizarre. I have a Welsh name. You wouldn't say, oh, he has a Welsh name. It's very weird. Now, what happened to that skier? It's interesting. Just like the tennis player, you know, that skier just vanished.
Exactly. I mean, she, you know, the entire media was waiting to interview her to see if they could, you know, speak to her, and she didn't even, you know, she didn't appear. Like, she just disappeared. How bad? You know, some of us speculate that her, by, you know, even just coming there, she was forced to. Obviously, this is a propaganda play by the Chinese government, and, you know, she probably was forced to be there just because, you know, if not, her family is going to be in danger. And this is how China, you know, coerces Uyghurs to do things that we otherwise would never do.
Right. Could you imagine in the Berlin Olympics if Hitler would have had a Jewish athlete light the flame? And people go, see there, he's not so, it's just, it's preposterous. They think we're that simple. But again, I think it backfired. It blew up in the face of NBC and the CCP. It blew up in their face. Every it's past the point of no return. It's over. Right? It's over. So where do we go from here? I believe I'm more hopeful than you are, but it's easy for me, right? It's easy for me to be more hopeful. Because this, your family and your friends and your countrymen are suffering. And I don't mean to sound callous. I just want to inspire you. Because I am very hopeful. I was really afraid that these games would go on business as usual. There would be no kickback. But to see that the brands aren't even like celebrating that they're sponsoring the Olympics is striking. But where do we go from here? Because one thing has become clear. The Beijing games have made it clear to me. It's not just about freeing East Turkestan or freeing Tibet, keeping Taiwan free, pushing the CCP's brutal measures out of Hong Kong. We have to defeat the CCP, right? Would you say that's it? The CCP is an existential threat to all peoples of the world.
Absolutely. I mean, they are a threat to freedom, to human life, to democracy all across the world, you know, not just, you know, in Asia or in the territories that it's currently occupying, but here, even in the United States, you know, unfortunately, they've managed to, you know, buy influence at all levels in the American society, whether it's corporations, Congress, etc.
And so how do we do that? Give us some practical steps. One thing, the Innis Cantor Freedom has this commercial with a member of Congress and Michael Waltz. And it says, you know, when you see something made in China, put it down. But if we want to buy a phone, if we want to buy a computer, you know, that seems like a real hard task. But I want to try to keep, you know, I need a new computer, by the way. So like, how do I buy a new computer that's not made in China? But I think that's a practical first step, right? If at all possible, if we see made in China, put it down. And isn't it startling that there are some products you just can't buy unless it's made in China?
Yes, and that's the saddest thing out there, you know, is that we need to, you know, try to encourage, you know, others, you know, work with, you know, probably, you know, a new startup or something, you know, for a better alternative. Like even like the phone, everything, like you said, whether it's the phone, whether it's the computer, everything is sadly made in China. We've become, you know, so dependent on them that they're using that to get away with genocide. They're using that to, you know, get away with COVID, you know, the coronavirus, you know, the CCP virus without any accountability. And I think this is where, you know, if there's any entrepreneurs out there listening to this, I hope, you know, they, business people, I hope they, you know, come up with, an alternative to, you know, create, you know, these other, you know, these technology, these, you know, computers, phones, whatever it is, in another country that is not, you know, China. Like, you know, right now, even the cost of labor in China has, you know, severely increased. So you're not profiting as much there. Plus, you know, you're doing business with a government that's engaging in genocide. So like a better alternative would be, you know, creating, you know, moving your operations, you know, your factories to, you know, countries like Thailand, to India, Bangladesh, and even like in Mexico, for example, or Latin America. That would, you know, help boost the economy of those countries, and, you know, ease the tensions on, you know, the migration of people from, you know, Latin America and South America into the United States. It would be a win-win situation.
But, you know, this prime minister is why we have to crush the globalists too, because the globalists have set it up so that it's you can't be competitive unless you have your products made in China. And we maybe need to work to change that architecture to encourage production at home, or those countries that ring China, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, you know, India, Nepal. We need to make allies out of those countries that ring China. And a way to do that is to encourage moving manufacturing to those countries where it's not practical immediately to move manufacturing at home. But that's why it's become clear. We have to crush the globalists, and all of us have to do that at home, right? So if you're in Germany, in Switzerland, by the way, Switzerland, what's going on? This show, Prime Minister Hedaya, is just blowing up. I think we might have won the top podcasts in Switzerland last week, if not number one. But we need people around the world to push the globalists out of their country, to break their back there, because they're allied against the peoples of the world. And they're partnering with the genocide regime of the CCP. And so, so we stop buying in China till China's free. And what's next?
As you know, while we are grateful, you know, for the genocide recognition, for the, you know, statements, the statements of concern, condemnations, you know, the diplomatic boycotts, these alone are not enough. I mean, the Chinese government, especially the CCP, they seem not to almost not care, you know, about this, you know, and they're not even trying to, you know, de-escalate, you know, the gravity of the atrocities that they're committing in Eastern standards. In fact, they're, you know, further, you know, increasing the level of the atrocities. So in this sense, you know, there needs to be accountability at the international level. And the UN, for example, has been utterly silent for years on the ongoing genocide. I mean, the whole point of the UN, the reason it was created, you know, after World War II, was to prevent, you know, to maintain peace and to prevent, you know, atrocities like the Holocaust from happening again. And that's why they had the UN Genocide Convention, the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. And yet, you know, almost every country in the world has signed on to that convention, especially, you know, the democratic nations. I think China even signed on, but it hasn't ratified it. So we have, you know, treaty obligation, especially those governments that have recognized it as a genocide, like the United States. We have a treaty obligation to prevent and punish, you know, those, you know, committing the crime of genocide. And we have not been able to do that effectively. The UN has been silent. The UN was supposed to write a report on the situation in East Turkestan before the Olympics, and it hasn't done that. And shortly after that, hit the media, China's, you know, the CCP invited the UN human rights chief, Michelle Bachelet, to visit East Turkestan on a friendly visit after, you know, in the first half of 2022, after the Beijing 2022 genocide games. But it's only going to be a friendly visit. There won't be any investigation. So if she's going to go there, you know, for a friendly visit, then essentially she's going there to, you know, further, you know, to serve as a Chinese propaganda piece to further, you know, whitewash and deny the ongoing genocide in East Turkestan. Her visit will be no different than the 1944 International Red Cross visit to Tehran, if I pronounce that correctly, which was a Jewish ghetto and concentration camp in occupied Czechoslovakia, and over 33,000, you know, Jews were killed in that concentration camp by the Nazis. And what they did when the International Red Cross came to visit is, you know, they took down some of the barbed wires. They, you know, put on this Pumpkin Village show and said, oh, you know, the Jews are happy. We're providing them with jobs. You know, we're feeding them. You know, they've never been happier. This type of stuff. And China is going to do the same thing, no doubt, if there's not going to be an actual, you know, unfettered, you know, unrestricted investigation.
We have to, Prime Minister, we have to build a strategy around that visit. You know, that's a peg. That's another opportunity for us to highlight the absurdity of these institutions that are supposed to be, you know, investigating genocide or defending human rights. Because I'm glad you mentioned the United Nations. I've been a longtime advocate for getting the United States out of the UN and kicking the UN out of the United States. They haven't stopped a single genocide. I mean, what good has the UN done since its founding? What good has it done? I brought a survivor of ISIS, two survivors, a Kurdish Muslim and a Yazidi girl. We went to the UN to a conference hosted by the Holy See, that is the Vatican, the Catholic Church at the UN. It was a conference on internally displaced peoples. The entire conference was blaming global warming for the displacement of people in Iraq and Syria. We asked for a moment to speak, and my friends, the Yazidi young woman and the Kurdish woman, went up to speak. And the Yazidi and the Kurdish woman each took their turn speaking, and the Kurdish woman said, "With all due respect, I am a Muslim woman, and global warming has nothing to do with the displacement of and the genocide against the Yazidis, the Kurds, and the Christians that's in the Iraqis taking place at the hands of ISIS. It's the death cult of ISIS." And they banged the gavel and they called the meeting to an end. Everyone turned their backs on these two ISIS survivors, all these UN people, and they walked out. No one stood to ask a question. They were not excited to have an opportunity to hear firsthand accounts of what it was like to be a slave and a victim of ISIS. They literally banged the gavel, put their heads down, turned their backs, and walked out on these two women. It's startlingly unbelievable. And our State Department's not any better. I met with the Yazidi woman who met with the State Department in the midst of the genocide, and this was a Yazidi leader, and the State Department, actually a Kakai leader, and the State Department official told her, we're not focused on ethnic problems at the moment. This was in a meeting in Iraq, in Erbil. We're focused on LGBTQ issues. So, I mean, look, the deep state, the globalists, they're the problem. The United Nations is the problem. Corporations like Disney that produce, look at Mulan. That film Mulan is going to be in the history books as the most grotesque propaganda in the midst of a genocide in the history of the world. Would you agree with that?
Yes. The movie Mulan in itself, I mean, it was a propaganda piece to, you know, aimed at the Chinese people to, you know, continue demonizing the Uyghurs as a bunch of barbarians and so forth. Because that movie, you know, the scenes, part of the scenes that were, you know, were filmed in East Turkestan near, you know, these concentration camps, whereas the Huns or the Shan Yu, you know, who is made out to be this bad guy, he's actually, you know, if you look at it, he's actually trying to, you know, free his people from the Chinese Empire rather than bowing down to the Chinese Empire because they killed his family or so forth. And this is what's exactly happening in East Turkestan right now. And the way, like, even if you look at it, the way that they, you know, made them, you know, the way that they dressed up the Huns, you know, like they were like some Taliban or something like that, you know, all black, you know, wearing turbans and stuff, when turbans and stuff like that was not even in the narrative, you know, the historical perspective, that didn't even exist at that time. But this is the way that the Chinese government is trying to demonize, you know, the Uyghurs in front of the Chinese people, stating that, you know, these are barbarians, these are who they are, you know, etc. So it's appalling that Mulan took part in that. I mean, Disney took part in that, and Disney, you know, it's very hypocritical, you know, when it comes to, you know, cultural appropriation and, you know, Black Lives Matter, it claims to be, you know, against all that, against, racism, against discrimination, etc. Yet, it went over to East Turkestan to film essentially a propaganda film aimed at the Chinese population to demonize Uyghurs and the other Turkic peoples living in East Turkestan as a bunch of barbarians and enemies of the Chinese state, etc.
Yeah, but Disney, I realized when they made Mulan that Disney has never changed its policy. And this might offend some people, but when it was perfectly acceptable in America and when Black Americans couldn't muster political power or economic force, Disney had no problem trampling on them or even First Nations people. They had no problem doing that. But once communities have power, political clout, economic power, well, then they respect them. So Disney's rule is, if you don't have economic power, political clout, we will trample on you. And then we will respect you when you can marshal power. So when East Turkestan is free and independent, and the Uyghurs can marshal power and economic clout, they'll make a Uyghur movie about a Uyghur princess. They'll celebrate it. And they'll move, but they have the same rule. Trample the vulnerable, feign concern for the vulnerable, but while trampling the truly vulnerable. Apologize for your mistakes when you trampled the vulnerable in the past who've since now become powerful. Bow to them, apologize to them, and then sell them a movie too. Sell them products too. It's victimism. Victimism is the rule. Feign concern for the vulnerable for wealth, power, and prestige. Trample the truly vulnerable for wealth, power, and prestige. So partner with the CCP to make Mulan. You know what else is more dangerous about Mulan too? Not just the Chinese in Chinese, but my wife and children are Chinese, right? So it was very hard for us not to want to watch that film. We boycotted that film, of course. But I can tell you, I had to wrestle with my kids and my wife because they felt like, well, this is a Chinese story, and my wife really wanted to see it. And I said, we can watch the old cartoon. We are not watching this movie. We didn't watch the movie. But what I worry about is how it can propagandize the Chinese in this country, their children, to foment a subtle prejudice to the Uyghur before they're even aware of the issue. Right? Most people who watched Mulan weren't even aware of the Uyghur genocide, so they were just planting subtle seeds to prepare them how to respond to when they address the issue, when the issue finally rises to their level of conscience.
Yes. Earlier, I forgot to mention, following up on what needs to be done, the East Turkestan government in exile and the East Turkestan National Awakening Movement, along with, the East Turkestani people, we filed a formal complaint case against China, against Chinese officials at the International Criminal Court back in July of 2020 for genocide and crimes against humanity. Now, since the UN we don't see the UN actually investigating this because, again, they seem to be very corrupted or influenced by the Chinese government, but the International Criminal Court can. But, this is where governments need to, step up. Governments and organizations that actually care about the Uyghurs, that actually want to do something meaningful, they need to, call on the ICC to investigate, the Chinese officials for the ongoing genocide against the Uyghurs and other peoples of East Turkestan. And this, needs to be done, the Olympics doesn't end for what, another week or so? This needs to be done either, during the Olympics or shortly afterwards, but definitely before, Michelle Bachelet decides to go to, East Turkestan to take part in China's propaganda, Pumpkin Village.
What can we do to push that along?
Well, the first thing that we can do, obviously, is to just urge, our elected officials, because previously the U.S.'s relationship with the International Criminal Court over the issue of Afghanistan had been I don't want to say hostile, but a bit difficult. There was a bunch of disagreements, and the Trump administration had impose, you know, sanctions on the ICC, but the current administration, the ICC, I mean, the Biden administration, they removed sanctions on the ICC, and they decided that, you know, they're going to cooperate and ease the relationship. And in this sense, you know, we need to urge our policymakers, you know, our elected officials to, who are, many of them are still unaware that the Uyghurs have a case against China at the ICC. We need them to, you know, at least speak out about this and urge, you know, the Biden administration to, you know, call on the ICC to investigate China for the genocide and other crimes that it's taking, that it's undertaking against the Uyghurs. Because at the end of the day, if you know, condemnations, protests, all of this, it's great, but it's not going to, you know, do anything meaningful for the Uyghurs in East Turkestan. It's not going to get us any justice. Our people are still going to continue to suffer. So investigations, you know, need to start immediately. And if China has nothing to hide, if China claims, you know, that, you know, these are re-education camps, then it shouldn't oppose, you know, investigation happening. If, you know, this trial, you know, that this court case, you know, the Chinese government will be able to put forth their evidence, and they will get a free and fair trial, much more, you know, something that they don't even offer to the billion plus people in China.
Is there any hope that, okay, so let's say these investigations go forward, is there any hope that the CCP will amend itself?
I mean, it's like asking, you know, that, you know, many of the Nazis, that, you know, top-level Nazis will amend themselves. I doubt they will. But there, you know, there are not all the people, you know, that are, you know, many of the people that are even CCP members, you know, they're either coerced to be a CCP member, or because of the selfish benefit that they will get, you know, to protect themselves, their families, etc. So I don't think all, you know, the 80 or 90 million plus CCP members are all evil. It's just the, you know, the ideology and the propaganda that is being driven by the core, you know, those people need to be held accountable. And I think that, you know, the remaining, you know, people, you know, we can, in after, you know, we get our independence back, after we end this genocide, we can, you know, reconcile, just like how the Israel reconciled with, you know, the post-Nazi government, you know, of Germany after the Holocaust and after the Nuremberg trials.
Well, you would think after this debacle, I mean, China has become the laughingstock, the joke, an embarrassment to the world. And the Beijing Olympics have driven this point home. And you would think that there would be members in the CCP who are well aware, powerful, influential members, that what Xi has done to China's place in the world, that has made China, that has dragged China's name through the mud, and has put China in a very dangerous place. You would hope that there were some powerful members within the party that would seek to depose Xi. I don't know, you know, how possible, if that's possible or likely, but I would have to imagine there are people thinking that, that they have to be embarrassed. These Olympics are such a disgrace. Did you see the bobsled, the young woman from Belgium, the bobsledder who made an Instagram video about how horribly she's being treated in the COVID quarantine prison that they have her in?
Yes.
I mean, this is how they treat the best and the brightest from the nations of the world with all eyes looking. How do they treat the Uyghur where no eyes are allowed to see? That's what you have to ask yourself. This is how they treat our national treasures with all the eyes of the world paying attention. How do they treat the Uyghur, an ethnic community that most of the world doesn't know exists, with no eyes on them? How are they being treated? when we have our athletes breaking down into tears after just 3 days of this crap?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Chinese government is able to get away with a lot of atrocities right now. You know, in the camps, you know, people are, as we spoke before, you know, everybody, most people, especially, I think you know this very well, and I think most of your listeners of this podcast have already become familiar with it. You know, people are being subject to, you know, forced indoctrination, torture, rape, sexual abuse, sterilization, you know, forced, you know, sleep deprivation, hunger, you know, they're being killed for their organs. They're being used as slaves for 16 to 18 hours a day. You know, constantly being beaten simply, you know, because of who they are. And this is just like the tip of the iceberg. We don't know the full details of what's going on. And sometimes I don't even want to think about it because I have, you know, family members, cousins, aunts, uncles who are there. And some of them, you know, even one of my cousins, she was only 13 when they, you know, arrested her. And they sentenced her for, you know, 15 years in prison for, you know, having read the Quran. You know, this is the type of thing that's going on. And like hearing the stories, you know, hearing the testimonies of the witnesses of what's happening to the women, how they are being, you know, raped by Chinese security forces in front of all the other detainees. You know, being gang raped, like, I don't even want to think about that, you know? Just imagine your own daughter or your sister or your mother or your wife, whoever, you know, even if it's not someone that's close to you, just, you know, having to hear about a woman being, you know, assaulted in the most atrocious way, you know, not just her honor, but, you know, the physical, you know, torture and humiliation that she's, you know, you can't even describe it. Like, I don't even want to think about that. But these are the type of things that are happening on a daily basis. You know, these are not testimonies that, you know, just that came from just the concentration camp survivors, but also from the Chinese police officers who, you know, had been sent to East Turkestan, you know, from Eastern China, saying that, oh, well, let's send you to, you know, East Turkestan, we're engaging in a counter-terrorism operation and you're going to be fighting against terrorists. And he said, when I arrived, you know, what I saw were not terrorists, but just average people. He said, you know, we stamped, you know, he said some of us stamped down on, you know, the heads of these, you know, 13, 14-year-old kids and left them to die. These are the types of things that are, you know, happening away from, you know, the attention of the international community.
But so, but the media knows, the international community knows, they choose not to front shelve these stories. You know, the New York Times has covered the Uyghur genocide and they put it at page B17. And to me, that's more offensive than not putting it on the front, than not covering it all, because it shows that they know. How can you put genocide on page B17? I want everyone listening to pay attention. When you'll see the Uyghur stories, you'll hear about the rape, the organ harvesting, the slave labor, and then ask yourself, why is this buried in page B16? If this is true, why isn't this the front page? Well, the New York Times never covered the Holocaust, even well after they knew that it was happening. So again, it's the beautiful, wealthy, privileged classes up to their old tricks. They don't ever rock the boat. They kowtow to those in power, and they hide the most vicious truths. And so what you just said, Prime Minister, the world knows. You know, I'm glad you mentioned the courageous Chinese, Han Chinese police officers who have worked to get the message out to the world what's happening in Chinese-occupied East Turkestan. Because I have even heard from people. There was a thin-souled, childish goon that I boxed with, and he was on my social media, and I shared a meme on the genocide, and he commented in the threads, which I really didn't even respond to because he's so thin-souled and childish, and he's an Army guy. He's in the military, career Army guy. And he put, yeah, China's doing our work for us in the war on terror, killing extremists. So even in the West, here's a U.S. soldier and parroting the CCP propaganda. But then you have in China police officers, and who I'm imagining are members of the party, right? Yeah, I can't imagine you're a police officer without being a member of the party. And yet they take the risk of their life to tell the world about what's happening to the people of East Turkestan.
Yes, I mean, in many ways, like, the, you know, there were many red flags leading up to the current genocide. Like, governments were fully aware of this. In fact, you know, they bought into, you know, because of other political purposes, they bought into China's lie that it was, you know, fighting against terrorism. Like, literally 2 weeks before 9/11 happened, the Chinese Communist Party secretary, then, what was his name? Meng Luchen. He held a conference in East Turkestan, a press conference, you know. And there he stated, you know, he was trying to secure, you know, Western investment into East Turkestan, you know, for the Chinese government's colonial projects. And, you know, journalists asked, you know, is there any ethnic tensions? Is there any problems? And he's, you know, is there any attacks? Is there anything happening here? Like, you know, we've heard about, you know, Uyghurs demonstrating and this and that. And he's like, no. You know, he said, quote, Xinjiang has never been this peaceful. There's no attacks. There's nothing like that. There's no problems here. Everything is great. Then 9/11 happened. And immediately the next day, China is like, oh, we are victims of East Turkestani terrorism, etc. Then 2 months later, on November 11th at the United Nations, China, you know, fabricated a list of, you know, several dozen so-called, you know, terrorist organizations, you know, adding, you know, like, for example, they're like, oh, East Turkestan Islamic Movement, East Turkestan Islamic something something, East Turkestan Islamic something something else, you know, just adding the word Islamic or Muslim in there. And then saying that, oh, we are fighting against these forces. These forces have been, you know, trying to undermine China. They've been engaging in terrorism, etc., which is, you know, all lies. And initially, the U.S. government, you know, refused to, list all of these, you know, entities. In fact, the U.S. government knew China was lying, so they're like, no. But because of the U.S. wanting to, you know, enter into Iraq, and, you know, they had to get China, ensure that China was not going to veto it at the U.N. Security Council. So they finally, you know, agreed to list one organization, which was called the so-called East Turkestan Islamic Movement. And there had been no prior mention of that organization prior to November 11, 2001. There was no record of that. In fact, there is no organization ever calling itself that, you know, the East Turkestan Islamic Movement. But China used that to, you know, get the international community to accept that, the U.S. to accept that as a terrorist organization. Then immediately, because the ETIM, it's like the acronym in Uyghur, I mean, the other acronym for it is also East Turkestan Independence Movement. So in the Western prop world, they referred it to as the East Turkestan Islamic Movement. Then to the people of East Turkestan, they said, oh, the U.S. sees your independence movement as a terrorist movement. They listed the East Turkestan Independence Movement as a terrorist movement. Now you're all a bunch of terrorists.
You know, I've been to Texas independence meetings. When I was in Hawaii, a Hawaiian sovereignty organization, I gave them office space in my office. Could you imagine if the United States just decided to declare the Texas independence movement? How many states have independence movements? The Hawaii independence movement, is designated them as terrorists, rounded them up, harvested their organs, made them make shoes for Nike, pick cotton for Nike. Could you imagine? That's what's going on. And this is what I'm saying, that the deep state, the globalists, the mainstream media, and the CCP are in bed. They're calling these truck drivers. Have you seen, they're calling these truck drivers in Canada fascists? Have you seen this?
Yes, yes. I actually saw it. And in fact, this past Saturday, when we had the February 5th, the 25th anniversary of the Ulja massacre, we did a demonstration here in Washington. And we also did a demonstration in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And the, you know, the truckers were also there. There were people, you know, protesting against, you know, the harsh, you know, the COVID passport thing system that the Canadian government was trying to impose. And they joined us, you know, to stand in solidarity with us. And so it became a very large demonstration over there for us as well.
Yeah, this is why they know they're in trouble. You know, the neoliberals pretended to speak up for the disenfranchised. They don't speak up for the working class here. They don't defend the working class in Canada. They're not supporting the Uyghur in Chinese-occupied East Turkestan. The gig is up. I just saw the most recent polls. Black Americans and Latino Americans are moving to the Republican Party in numbers like never seen before. And if they allow this election to happen in November, the Democrats are going to be trounced. And we need to fight for leadership positions in the House, and we need to have committee hearings. One of the things I'd like to do with you, and we can talk about this with my team and your team offline, is we need to make sure that every candidate that we want to vote for comes out in their campaign statements in support of measures to free the Uyghur in the CCP concentration camps. That's something we need. We can't vote for any candidate that doesn't take a position on this. We have to make sure they side with us. This is a non-negotiable issue, and we need to make sure that we know where every candidate running for office in 2022 stands on the Uyghur issue. And we need to give them clear, concise positions that they need to hold to, and then action items that they promise to take once they're in Congress. And this is not only directly with the Uyghur, but to decouple our economy from the CCP. We need to decouple our economy from the CCP, and we need to put as maximum pressure to get these Uyghur freed from the concentration camps.
Yes, we need to, you know, ensure that not just to, you know, candidates, but also already our elected officials, we need to, you know, urge them, especially those that are silent, to speak out as well. Like, this should be one of their top, you know, foreign policy issues.
I'm with you on that. Any last words before we land the plane?
Again, you know, we urge everyone to do whatever they can, you know, simply by even sharing this podcast, you know, informing others about the Uyghurs, about what's going on. That makes a huge impact. And we need to do everything that we can, you know, that in our within our capabilities. You know, like in our religion, we say, you know, first, we have to exert our efforts, you know, do what we need to do. And victory, you know, that's something that, you know, comes from God.
That's right. And God is going to, we just have to correspond our will to the grace that God has given us. And the CCP, the communists have always, they've had to destroy those that acknowledge a transcendent moral truth. And so the CCP, whether it's Taoists, Christians, Muslims, anyone that recognizes a truth above the state, just like the leftists in America, if you don't, if you recognize a truth above Facebook fact checkers, you're a terrorist. And to the CCP, anyone who recognizes a transcendent moral truth is a threat. And so that's why, Prime Minister Hedaya, it's a privilege for us to stand arm in arm with you. We're going to have your website in the show notes, and I ask that everyone becomes a monthly donor for you, because we're talking a community that's the Uyghur community. These are working class people, first generation immigrants, struggling to make ends meet and support their efforts to get the word out. They need us to stand with them, to stand beside them. So, Prime Minister Hedaya, I hope that everyone listening becomes a monthly donor. Have you seen Has our audience stepped up and supported you? Do you see that? That's a no. That's a no.
I don't want to embarrass anyone, so I just prefer not to comment.
No, okay. I don't know if I've ever done a direct ask for you. I'm ashamed for that. I really hope people listening go into the show notes and stand with the Uyghur. And it's the most important thing we can do. I talked to a friend of mine whose grandparents were Holocaust survivors. And when I was telling him the issue, I said to him, you know, the most beautiful thing that you can do for your grandparents is stand with the Uyghur. You stand with the Uyghur because you couldn't stand with your grandparents. And pray God that Salih Hudaya's grandchildren are going to stand with some other community. And so that's what I hope, is that people listening go into the show notes, click on the National Awakening Movement's website, and give a small donation. If that's all you can do, become a small monthly donor. But let's just stand side to side with the Uyghur as they go forward. Prime Minister Hudaya, thank you very much for coming on the show. You have been a part of the pentathlon of podcasting. I don't know if you know this, we're doing a show every single day during the genocide games to highlight a different crime of the CCP. And you would think that 16 days would be hard to fill up with content. And really, we could do, maybe I'll just do 365 days a year, year after year until the CCP falls. We can, I mean, the crimes are unimaginable and unending of the CCP. So thank you for joining our show, and thank you for your work. And I can promise you, by God's grace, there's going to come a day where you and I travel to a free China, and then from there we go to a free East Turkestan. And I can't wait for that day.
Likewise. Thank you, and God bless you, Jason, and God bless everyone who's listening to this show and that has been actively supporting, you know, the Vulnerable People's Project and, the Uyghurs.
Yeah, and I want to say that we have, if you support the show, you have been standing with the Uyghur, right? And of course, I want people to support this organization. But Prime Minister Hudaya is at the very, very front line. In fact, I think when I first founded this podcast, Prime Minister, didn't I tell you I'd like to interview you every day? But what we'll do is we'll mix it up and get you on as much as possible. And I think the reason I ultimately started this podcast was just so I could have a platform to speak out for the Uyghur. I really think that was what was in my mind, because I was just so frustrated in those early days, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when it was really hard to find platforms to let us speak. But now, I was just on Alex Jones this week. I did 2 hours on the Alex Jones show, and he wore the DOPA again this episode. I gave him the beautiful green DOPA that you gave me, and he wore it again on the show. And now we hear Tucker Carlson and Steve Bannon and so many others just constantly railing for the Uyghur. And so we're in a different place than we were 4 years ago, and I pray by God's grace we have a free East Turkestan in 4 years from now.
Amen. Thank you. God bless you.
All right. Aloha, Prime Minister. All right, everybody. This is, we're wrapping up another day of this pentathlon of podcasting. I've not just been doing this pentathlon, as you maybe can hear in my voice. I've been doing a lot of radio and television, going everywhere I can to talk about the plight of those we abandoned in Afghanistan, and also to make sure nobody, not you, not me, none of us are going to watch 1 minute of these genocide games, not 1 minute, and we're not going to purchase one product from any of the sponsors of the genocide games. What a disgrace. What a disgrace to intertwine your company, your business, your products, your brands, your employees, to intertwine them in solidarity. I don't know if that's the right word, in cahoots with the CCP. How dare you, you know, take your company and then form an alliance, go into cahoots with the CCP to make money? What a shame. We're not going to do that. We're not in cahoots with the CCP. In fact, we're committed to the defeat of the CCP. Free Tibet, free Taiwan, keep Taiwan free at all costs, free Hong Kong, free the church in China, free the Chinese, and free the Uyghur. Thank you for listening to the show. I'm going to have Prime Minister, I'm ashamed of myself that I never did a direct ask. I don't think I ever did a direct ask for Prime Minister Hudaya. I would ask that you become a monthly donor and support Prime Minister Hedaya's organization and his work. I will put that in the show notes. Also, go to Mike Lindell's My Pillow. He has all sorts of specials, a big special this month on bedding. So go there. Use the secret code. It's a secret. And the code is Jones. And that secret code gives you access to deep, deep discounts. And even to those government employees in Beijing listening to the show, I see you light up yellow on our on the program, the tracks where this program's being listened to. You know, I want you to get these great sheets. They're made in America, and they're better than what you can get there. And we'll send, you know, send me an email, and we'll send you a box of pillows. So go to MyPillow.com, use the code Jones, and you get deep discounts. Until tomorrow, where we have Sheila Logminas, an Emmy Award-winning reporter, we're going to have Sheila Logminas on to talk about the shamelessness of the NBC and the mainstream media in covering these Olympics. You're not going to want to miss that show with the great Sheila Logminas. She had a radio show for many, many years on Relevant Radio, wrote for Time, and she is a true icon of journalism and a warrior for human rights. Until next time, it is Jason Jones Show.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.